Call the meeting of the St. Paul City Council Budget Committee to order. Welcome and good morning, folks. Today we are diving into sales tax revitalization program, STAR, which I always forget what STAR stands for, so thank you for spelling that out for us, and the 2020 proposed budget. I'd like to also acknowledge that looking into STAR broadly was a priority of the City Council this year. We did get an update about a month ago from Ms. Houston and the committee about kind of where we were at in terms of identifying what were policies, what were requirements under the state statutes and so on. And we are expecting to get continue to dig into that in the beginning part of next year. So we'll hear back on that as well. Today we're going to be focused primarily on what is in STAR for the 2020 budget. In addition to that, we will be hearing from the River Center Convention and Visitor Authority with their 2020 proposed capital budget. So let us begin. It looks like we have Ms. Earl and Mr. Solomon here to present to us today. So welcome and good morning.
Thank you. Good morning, Council President Benon. Susan Earl, Office of Financial Services, Interim Budget Manager. Here, like you said, talking about the STAR 2020 budget. And Mr. Solomon is here. Actually, start with him in the 2020 budget. For STAR, a lot of what's driving the changes that you'll see are debt refinancing and changes to the debt structures that are within the STAR budget. So I want to let Mr. Solomon highlight those first for you.
And so we're going to refresh our memory of what happened. I think that's great. Wonderful. Thanks for doing that.
Great. Thank you, Council President Bremmo and council members. So this slide really talks about what's new with STAR in 2020, which is primarily a debt story. You may recall way back in the spring of 2019, the city was successful in negotiating a lease extension with the Minnesota Wild, keeping the team here in the XL Energy Center through 2035. And the extension of that lease really allowed us to move forward with a number of debt restructurings and refinancings that had a lot of positive results for the city. So where you previously on the 2019 budget have seen things such as the 2009 XL Energy Center debt, 2007 Invest St. Paul debt, and then a new debt obligation that was outside of this system related to the River Center parking ramp, we've now wrapped those into some new debt line items that you'll see. I don't want to jump too far ahead, but we will have this blue highlighted budget sheet that you may be familiar with, and that kind of highlights some of these changes, so I'll just reference some of those lines as I go through these, really just to give you a sense of all the current sales tax debt that's outstanding. The city's half-cent sales tax is directly pledged to these obligations, so before it comes back to the city to fund all of our STAR programs, it does kind of fill the buckets, if you will, on the debt side. So the current sales tax debt obligations are the 2019 River Center Complex debt service. These are the XL Energy Center arena bonds, and that is line 20 on our sheet. That number for the 2020 budget is $761,250, and that's down from $2.3 million we'd been budgeting annually for that debt service. So by extending that debt out and changing our deal with the team, we've been able to bring that down significantly. The second debt obligation that's outstanding is the 2019 B and C debt service. That refinanced the Invest St. Paul bonds as well as the River Center parking ramp. As some of you know, the ramp is in a place where we're currently evaluating the future, and getting rid of the debt on that was very important. It was a pretty small piece, but really makes a lot of sense operationally for us and financially for the city. That number is displayed on line 15, $2.972 million in 2020, and that's pretty flat from past years. And then the last one is the 2014 Economic Development Bond debt service, the 880 bonds that were issued in 2014. That's line 23. We did not mess with those, and so the $2.5 million is the same number there that you've seen in the past. So those debt changes really kind of set up the 2020 STAR budget. So if you have any questions on those, I'm happy to take them. Otherwise, I'll hand it back to Ms. Earl to go through the budget.
I was writing stuff down and I missed you. Yep. You were talking about line 20 from the 2019A River Center Complex.
Yep.
Debt service. Can you tell me the differential again?
Yeah, so that number used to be $2.3 million, so a pretty significant variance there. And that's just by benefit of extending out that debt and then getting lower interest rates.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Are there other questions for Mr. Solomon in this? Okay, thanks.
So I'll head to slide three of the presentation, 2020 sales tax mayor's proposed budget. I won't go through each line. I'll kind of highlight some of the big changes that we're seeing in 2020 and some of the items that it's important to highlight for you all in this budget. So just working down the page, line five, the Port Authority grant repayment, that's a one-time resource into the STAR fund. And then correspondingly on line 14, a one-time use of that funding for city capital projects in the general fund. So that's a one-for-one, one-time source and use in the STAR budget for 2020. Lines 6 and 7 are changes also debt-related and recognizing interest earnings that go into the STAR budget that will be budgeted and accounted for in 2020. And those are the big changes on the revenue side of the ledger. I'm going to jump around a little bit, so I apologize, but for the spending side, the first thing I wanted to highlight was the changes for capital projects. So city capital projects, the debt funding on line 12, the 4.25, that is an increase in the sales tax support for city general obligation debt. Way back when, the plan in terms of the ballpark, and to take you all the way back to those decisions, eventually the goal was that that would increase our sales tax and we'd be able to capture some of that in order to offset debt. And so the mayor is proposing that we increase our support for city general fund, general obligation debt from the STAR funds, from sales tax funds. So that's what that line is capturing.
Ms. Dinker. Thank you. How does that compare to what we've taken out of Neighborhood STAR for general obligation debt service in the past?
Last year it was $3.5 million, so it's a $750,000 increase.
And is there any – does Neighborhood STAR board have to approve that allocation?
Council Member Naker, I don't know the answer to that question. That would probably be a PED program question.
I mean, I assume it's coming out of the 60% that goes to Neighborhood STAR, which I...
It's more a city attorney.
Okay. We can follow up. Council President Brenmo and Council Member Naker, we can follow up and get that answer. I apologize. I don't know exactly what from that column goes to the STAR board and what is able to be directed outside of that process.
And just final question, is there any limit to how much from Neighborhood STAR, assuming whether or not there's approval of the board, can be allocated to general fund debt? I know the capital project restriction, but it was 3.9, now it's 4.3. Could we take all $9 million and pay for general fund debt? What's the line?
Council President Brenmo and Council Member Naker, I also don't know if there's a specific restriction in state law or other policies that would put a cap on the amount that we can move over to or use to support general obligation debt, but we can find that out for you as well.
And it's my hope and understanding that that's part of what our STAR work group is working on. I haven't participated in that, so I don't know, but that's my hope.
Okay. Great. On line 18, there's a small change for Cultural STAR for the Children's Museum. This is just the final year of that allocation, and so it went down slightly. It was $300,000 in the 2019 adopted budget, so just a minor change there. And then the last portion I'll highlight is really the continuation of the Housing Trust Fund work. Some of that funding was identified in 2019 with one-time sources, and the plan at that time was that we would continue to support the Housing Trust Fund according to the financing plan that had been laid out. And so line 10 and line 22, sort of after all of the debt changes were made and the other updates that had to be made to the resources and the spending for this program within the other line items, this is how the fund was able to balance in order to continue the Housing Trust Fund work. So those are the changes that the mayor's proposing.
Okay. Are there questions? Ms. Naker?
Thank you. Is this the proposal for the Housing Trust Fund funding into the foreseeable future, or how long are these allocations expected to come out of STAR?
So I'll look in case I misspeak, but it's the three-year funding horizon for the Housing Trust Fund.
So through 2021?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Tolbert.
Is there any in here proposed for year-round STAR?
In the Council President Brenmo and Council Member Tolbert, in this proposal, no. And what the mayor's proposed, there's nothing for no new year-round STAR allocation.
I think that's something that we should probably look at.
Ms. Snaker.
Thank you. What's the proposed use of the $950,000 in the economic development budget?
Council President Brenwell and Council Member Snaker. Line 14.
Yeah.
So that goes to funding city capital projects, for example, like our mill and overlay, anything that's capital eligible that comes out of the general fund. Sidewalks is now all general fund funded, so it goes to support those capital eligible items that are paid in the general fund.
But since this is a new one-time allocation for this year, is there any kind of, can we get a line item breakdown of how we propose to spend that? Because it seems like it's something out of the norm.
Oh, sure. Council President Brenmoan, Council Member Snaker, we can get a more detailed list of the capital eligible items that are in the general fund. Does that answer your question? Okay.
Well, and specifically how this amount is proposed to be spent.
Sure.
Okay, other questions? This is always a lot. On a little tiny font and type point sheet. And mine's a half sheet. okay. There's a little bit of kind of fits and starts just because we're also looking at just the fund generally, and I think this depicts why. There are lots of... it's being used very creatively and hopefully effectively. I think that one of the things we've talked about is there are parts of our STAR money that's carved out to do certain things, and they're one time or they, you know, end up coming in close to the end of budget, and maybe they actually belong here, and we need to find them, secure them a place so that it doesn't always feel haphazard. And then also, I'm wondering, the question that I have that is connected to STAR is that we, at our last HRA meeting, discussed the sale of the Spruce Tree parking ramp, which is an additional $1.5 million. And I'm wondering if that new capital influx has any potential bearing on what we're seeing in front of us here on the STAR monies or places we could take some pressure off STAR by using that one-time resource for some of these capital expenditures.
Council President Brenmoan, I think that's a fair question. I don't know that there's anything, I mean, this budget doesn't contemplate the Spruce Tree sale. And I don't know if Director Guild would want to speak to that further on from the HRA side, but we can note that as a question or something to, you know, for Ms. Houston and I to discuss further too.
Yeah, because I just heard Mr. Tolbert remind us that this is usually our opportunity to establish some year-round STAR funding, and there's no place for it, but maybe there's some way to relieve pressure so that there is. Ms. Prince?
Yeah, and I appreciate your bringing that up because I had the same thought that while it would be one-time money, maybe the Spruce Tree money could go into the Housing Trust Fund instead of STAR funds. I need, and this probably isn't the place to discuss it, but I need more information on the $1.5 million for cultural destinations. I'd like to get that from PED staff because last year I learned that it was a factor in selecting the Neighborhood STAR Awards in my ward, and the cultural destination area map had no particular, it made no particular sense in terms of the cultural area. It also created and Dr. Corey was aware of this, it created a lot of consternation in my ward because we are so multicultural, and the cultural destination map was limited to just a couple of organizations that are frequent recipients of STAR money. So I need to look at how that's proposed to be used and what the cultural destination areas are. And I would prefer to see it as a factor that they consider, but not a requirement for the use of STAR funds. On that question about the general debt service budget, and you said it's $750,000 over last year, how many years back does this go, and how much has it been over the years that we've had that line item?
Council President Bradmill and Council Member Prince, I don't know off the top of my head, but we can certainly get that. I don't know if Mr. Solomon has it. I think for as long as I can think back to, we've had general obligation debt support coming from STAR in terms of the amounts and the history on that. We can pull that together.
Great.
For you.
That would be sure. Because it does seem like we kind of throw in the whole kitchen sink here. I really am troubled with how we're just taking STAR money for all manner of every need that we have in the city, and I need to understand that better.
And I think they're great questions, and they need to be answered. And also, I think sometimes this is how we solve problems, and so if there's other ideas on how to find these monies, I think that would be a welcome addition to the question. Are there questions that we would like to ask for I mean, PED is in the house. There's no reason for you to be sitting back in what Ms. Nelson calls the pews. but if there are questions particularly, I think Ms. Prince's question was directed to PED. We're out of time. I mean, not on the clock this morning, but today is the 20th. We don't have a meeting next week. We have truth and taxation on the 4th, and we set our budget on the 11th. So this follow-up has to happen, like, now. So anything that we can answer sitting at the table would be better, recognizing that we also don't want you to guess. So if you don't really have an answer, don't guess. But if you do, we'd rather hear it now so that we can be fully prepared as we go into our budget deliberations here in the next few weeks. So Ms. Prince, do you want to reiterate?
The $1.5 million for cultural destinations is of concern to me. And to my knowledge, those maps were drawn without much input from any of us. The one that applied in my ward had no relation to the vast multicultural area that is Ward 7. And there were two applicants for Neighborhood STAR that were very much cultural destinations, and they were not eligible because they weren't within this outline of this map. So I need to understand that better.
So Council President Brenmore and Council Member Prince, glad to talk about it. The maps have been a significant topic of conversation within PED staff and within the Cultural Destination Area Collaborative members as well as the STAR Board. So we are currently working to revise some of the maps in close consultation with all of those parties, and we will add council members to that group who are looking at the maps. They were done very, very hastily last year, just right before the applications went live, and there were a lot of things that we missed. So we've learned a lot over the last year. Another thing that we're doing in addition to making modifications to the maps is adding a question to the application, asking people to articulate how their proposal would further the goals that the city has for the cultural destination areas. Because some of what we saw also was applications from businesses that were within the district, within the area defined by the map, but that weren't really something that was furthering the vision of cultural destination areas, or the business owner wasn't connected to that vision in a way that really they could and should be. So we're taking a very close look at how we articulate that in the application. The applications are going to be going out. They go live in February, I think, right?
End of January.
End of January. So we're not quite out of time as we are with this conversation, but we're working very concertedly on it right now. Another thing that I want to note is that the $1.5 million is not a carve-out in any way. It's not exclusively for the cultural destination area work. It is a target, a goal, something that we're hoping to achieve with outreach and with applications that, you know, fit in with that cultural destination area work. But if we don't see good quality applications come in from the destination areas and furthering the destination area vision, those dollars are very much available for other priorities of the city and the STAR board. That's something that I don't necessarily think was clear to applicants, to council members, to a lot of people last year, that really it's just a target approach. But that's what it is. So as we're talking with applicants about, you know, what the vision is, we want to be really clear.
Well, and to that point, I had several conversations with Dr. Corey about it where I felt as though we were really muddying the difference between cultural STAR and neighborhood STAR. Mm-hmm. I mean, to your point about if a business owner needed something, and specifically needed something like energy improvements and happened to be an ethnic business, that would not be seen as furthering the cultural destination area. My argument would be that anything that makes that business more sustainable in that location would be furthering the goals of the cultural destination area. So I think the difference between, although we may find out that this changes, but the difference between neighborhood STAR being for capital improvements and cultural STAR not being for capital improvements, I think we have to consider that capital improvements that strengthen a business in a cultural destination area are furthering the cultural destination area.
And I guess it's another opportunity. I think as we continue to develop this program and move forward with it, that there are some areas of the city, particularly Dayton's Bluff or Lower Payne Avenue and Frogtown, where there are lots of competing entities that are doing cultural destination works. And there's other places where there's no one doing the work. And I felt that it was a bit haphazard. For example, I felt like there's good coverage in the east side area of my ward, but in the north end area, we leaned on In Progress, like the kind of one standalone entity that really works with youth and developing their art, spoken art and digital artwork as a medium and a kind of a development. And I don't know how that works, you know, when it's kind of a one-person show. And so then we talk about, like, who's applying, and if they don't apply, then money will go someplace else. So I think that there's a couple sides to this where it's like I want to make sure that we are actually then investing in areas that don't have that same kind of competitive 15 people are, you know, this isn't going to the right group, and it's like, well, we need a group in some areas. So I think it's all a work in progress, and I want to make sure that we're continuing to analyze it and figure out if when there are places there that aren't getting applications, why aren't they getting applications, and what can we do to make sure that they have mentors and supports and help to continue to develop those cultural destinations as well. So it is, and I also, we struggle, I think, as a council with conversations about programs during the budget. And so, which is one of the reasons why we pulled out STAR to look at separately, because we want to talk about the whole policy and how we're using the money separate from the budget. But on the other hand, a lot of times budget is when things come to a head, and this is where we have the conversations. But I think that there are, I mean, clearly there's questions about STAR. Mr. Tao.
Thank you. just want to go back to item number 14 and $950,000. Can you name what I know you mentioned a mail-in overlay? Can you name what others might be and who's in this room that put this together that might have an idea what that's for?
Sure. Oh,
Go ahead.
Council President Brenmon and Councilmember Tao, the two biggest that come to my mind are it's mostly the public works, sidewalks and mill and overlay work that's paid for in the general fund. There's also some amount of capital work, the general fund subsidy that goes into the street maintenance service program. But per council member Naker's request, we'll make sure to get a full list of what the capital improvements are that we use or that are eligible to be used for STAR funds.
If I'm not mistaken, I think the big bulk of that was for the ADA improvements on the corners during the mill and overlays, which were ending up getting assessed to residential properties, even though it was a new construction and required by ADA. But I think I believe that is the bulk of that money.
Council President Brenmon, that's another item. I think we think of it really broadly, like sort of the whole program, but that's another cost pressure in the mill and overlay program that needs to be general fund funded. We're not assessing. Anything we don't assess needs to, obviously find another funding source. So you're right that's a portion of what goes into the cost for mill and overlay.
So thank you. So I'm just trying to find clarity here. So then it's so it's in the general fund,
mm-hmm.
but it's allotted to economic development.
Council President Brenmon, Councilmember Tao, it's an eligible use of STAR funds to move transfer this funding into the general fund to pay for capital work that's done out of that fund. So it ends up being a general fund resource into a transfer out of the STAR fund into the general fund to pay for eligible capital, city capital work that's done in that fund.
But it's under economic development.
Yes. Council President Brenmon, Councilmember Tao, yes.
So, I mean, I guess I'm trying to understand, how do we determine what's economic development? I feel like it seems so, what's the word? Convenient. Whenever we need to use money, then we move it around, we label it. And I guess I want to, where's the transparency, or how do we make it so that it's standardized, so that we don't have to keep guessing how accountings are formulated and money are moved?
Council President Brenmon, Councilmember Tao, If there's other information or other ways that we can present this information, I think our finance and PD were happy to do that. We'll provide the list as requested. And if we're getting into, I think, STAR guidelines and sort of what falls into which bucket, I know that that's an ongoing discussion that's happening, and I think probably bigger than this one line item. As you know, as everyone on the council knows, it's a pretty complex ecosystem of what goes where, and this is the simplest and I guess the most consistent way we've found in order to present that information, but we're happy to hear feedback on other information that we can bring or other ways to present in order to make what's a really complex, a really complex budget and a really complex set of regulations clearer if this isn't meeting the mark.
So I appreciate that. I think that going forward, it would help us support your budget or this sort of budget if you can include those items, itemize it for us in advance, so that I'm very cautious when someone say that they have a list somewhere and they'll provide it. I think that it's nothing personal. It's just that it help us support your position and what you guys are trying to do. So I like to going forward. I'd like to have those lists in advance.
And I would hope, Mr. Tao, in your work as the chair of the STAR work group, that some of those requirements or some of those some of that transparency could be part of what we propose in a policy change as well. Because I'm sitting here, I'm recognizing that one of the reasons we hear STAR so late in the season is because in August we don't know how much sales tax money we're going to have. So, I mean, we do end up hearing this late. But I think if we're very clear on what our policy is and what can go where and why, as a result of collaborating with you and with the STAR work group on these definitions going into next year, I think we'll be in a better spot when we get to this point. I appreciate having some flexibility with STAR because there's always unknowns. We all know that from our own finances. You know, sometimes you have to move money from here to here because your serpentine belt broke in your car. Not that that happened to me, but things happen. And so there, I do think flexibility is good, but also being clear when it's appropriate and when it's not, and what's the policy and what's the requirement. So I do feel like some of the stuff will be tightened up as a result of the work that you're doing as well. Ms. Nanker.
Thank you. Three hopefully quick things. First, Dr. Guild, could we get a line-by-line accounting of how the Housing Trust Fund is being funded? The last documentation I saw, I think, is out of date with the ISP refunding, and I don't understand how the $1.8 million this year from STAR is being added to and equals $10 million over 3 years. So is that something you could follow up with within a week so we have time to think about it for the budget?
Absolutely. So just very quickly right here, there's $2 million every year that is funded through a combination of STAR and the HRA dollars, HRA flexible dollars. So that's the 1.4 plus another 600,000 from HRA. But glad to provide the comprehensive picture.
I mean, yeah, the last Housing Trust Fund sort of line by line I saw had $5 million coming in 2020. So I want to just understand how it's all coming together. Do you know when, Mr. Earl, Mr. Solomon, we expect to see the sales tax above 2019 budget line two? I know that is sometimes that suddenly pops up and then gets allocated, and sometimes that's where year-round STAR, I think, has come from in the past. So when do we expect to have an estimate for that?
Council President Brenmo and Council Member Nanker, we at this point, I think it'll be after the books close. We do projections and we monitor revenues monthly. At this point, looking at where we're at with budget and the potential for potential sales tax petitions and other uncertainties between now and the end of the year, we don't think we're at a place to be able to project with certainty that we will collect above the 2019 budget and for 2019 actuals.
So early in the new year, we should know that.
I'm looking at Mr. Solomon when our collections are on a bit of a delay, but when it'll be early to middle of the first quarter of 2020 that we'll have final collection numbers for 2019.
Yeah, Council President Brenmo and Council Member Nanker, the thing to add is it's just looking a little bit tighter this year. Like Susan mentioned, there are some claims on multi-year claims that we've had the Department of Revenue paid out, and with the increase we made to the 2019 base budget, there just isn't as large of a variance at this point. I think February 2020 is when we'll have our final number for the year. So,
and then last question. This is a pretty basic one, but I'm not getting the math on, I know 60% goes to Neighborhood STAR. And I'm trying to remember my waterfall. Can you walk us through why that's not 60 and what's coming out on top?
Council President Brenmo and Council Member Nanker, I think I would want to walk through the waterfall again. Mr. Solomon has put it, like, this is a way to kind of show the budget. I think there are sources up above that aren't straight sales tax collection that then complicates the picture because we kind of show the interest earnings. We've got the Port Authority grant in here. And so that sort of changes the denominator in terms of this spreadsheet as it relates to just the sales tax, pure sales tax revenue. So I don't want to get into a lot of detailed math at this point and misspeak on how those percentages break out. So if it's okay, we can break this out a little bit differently to answer that question and get back to council if that's through Ms. Houston, if that's okay. There's just a little more complication, and because we have sources other than, you know, just the straight sales tax that show up here that then, like I said, change the denominator overall.
Okay, I'm going to look to Ms. Houston. Do we have time on 12-4 to get some of this reported back to us live, or are we going to be backed up against the wall with final budget?
Council President Brenmo, council members, December 4th, we have the city attorney's office presenting their budget, and then we were going to have time to discuss any changes that the council may be proposing to the budget. So at that time, we might have some time to fit it in.
Okay. So depending on what we hear, we could also check in with council members and put a recap from STAR. Then our budget conversation, and if there's time here from city attorney's office, or ask them to compress their presentation. But let's see what we hear back. Mr. Tao.
Yeah, just thank you, Council President. Just a a small friendly request is that as you present, I love to be able to see that wherever you put the bucket, whether it's the Civic Center bonds or the Neighborhood Star, the itemized, if we could just get a readout, okay, we're at 59% over here, we're at 44%, and we're good, we're 40% at the River Center bond. I think that makes it easier for someone like me who's not as good as math as some of you guys are, but I think that formula help us plug in whatever item we're spending. We're always accountable to meeting those goals, because I feel like this number, this ledger here, things gets moved all the time, and I just want to make sure that we are following the state guidelines, state statute, that we are putting no less than 60% in the Neighborhood Star.
Council President Brennan, Council Member Tao, thank you for that feedback. We will think about how to incorporate that information either into this or a different view going forward, so that you all have that information.
Ms. Anker.
Ms. Guild, can you remind us what the line 24, the $600,000 for PAYGO Economic Development, is going to this year?
Council President Brennan and Council Member Naker, typically that line has gone to the CBZ program, and you'll recall that originally that was divided. It was $1 million originally, and it was divided between $750,000 for CBZ and then $200,000 for ongoing pre-development work, first on the Ford site and then on Hillcrest, a combination of Ford and Hillcrest. And then there was $50,000 that was allocated for the design center. So with this new number, I think we're going to need to take a look with finance on, you know, how we would subdivide that. And I think last year we reduced the CVZ from 750 to 350. So from two projects to just one. And I know that there's been some conversation with the council about how to deploy the CVZ dollars moving forward. Long answer short, I think that there's some uncertainty still in precisely how we would be allocating.
So if it was $1 million and right. Now it's 600, what right. About the money for the planning for like Hillcrest or the super block or?
So where I would see that dividing up is 200 for Fort Hillcrest, other significant development projects moving forward, 50,000 for the design center, so 250, 600 minus 250, that would leave 350 still for the CVZ. So that's how that's all been baked in.
Where did the other 400 go?
So Council President Brennan, it was redirected into the Housing Trust Fund.
Ms. Anker, so do we, again, I mean, I think we're delving into the details here because we have no time left. And so we do need to understand where it's actually going. Do we have a CBZ project identified? I mean, have we decided that what that's going to be spent on?
Council President Brennan and Council Member Naker, we have a number of areas that we would be ready to propose for CVZ targets, and we had talked last year about the synergies between the CVZ program and the cultural destination area work, and I think that there's a lot of potential there. Where we've been holding back on the 2019 proposal is that I understand there have been some conversations about other ways that we may need to deploy those dollars. So I think we'd need to have some further conversation with finance and with the council about that 350 for CVZ in 2020. But we have a number of areas that we would nominate.
So it hasn't been assigned.
Correct.
That's still up for grabs. And I'll reiterate out loud that one of my concerns that has lingered about CVZ is monies that were allocated in 2015 are still not spent. So to continue to add to a CVZ program where we're unable to even spend the resources from 4 years ago is somewhat of concern. And I think that at least initially the CVZ projects were maybe outside the scope of what PED was working on and brought in by, you know, council members' priorities. So, you know, hearing that if it's more directly tied to work that we're already doing, that that might be make it more effective. But I do, I have concerns about CVZ funds that have been awarded and remain unspent still to this day.
Council President Brenmoen, if I may, some of the reasons that I've seen that the CVZ funds have been, that they've been slow to get out the door is because a lot of the initial work that, that we were doing was planning and visioning. And then we ended up investing a lot of those early dollars or committing a lot of those early dollars to public realm and infrastructure projects that we needed to bring in other city departments, other units of government sometimes, and they were time-intensive capital investments that we were making. In the last year or so, we've pivoted to be directing more of those dollars to business loans and grants and business improvements. And what we've seen as we've made that pivot is that we've been able to deploy those resources much more rapidly and much more directly toward economic development. Our project manager, Nora Reimann-Schneider.
The problem is that that sounds like STAR. That sounds like our neighborhood STAR. It sounds like cultural STAR. And CVZ was intended for public realm. It was for livability and walkability under the 880 program. So it's I'm not surprised that that was what we needed to do. Are we intending to do with that money? I don't know if any of us ever imagined that CVZ would be yet another STAR economic development and facade improvement fund. So I don't want to fall into the rabbit hole on CVZ because I think we've got an answer here. But I have concerns just about the program and making sure that we're effectively using that money for what we all agree that it is for. I'll leave it at that. And Mr. Tao and then Ms. Prince.
To follow up on that, I think that if I remember correctly, the CVZ, the procedure was that we would do like some sort of study, we would prep work for a certain project, and then from there it would come to the council, we would discuss it, and then we would approve it. So I think going forward, if that's going to change, then I'd like us to be transparent about that and so that we know what the expectations are and then we can then go back to members of the community organization that may be depending on this money going forward. My other thing is that I'd like to go into item number 26, the debt service for city capital fleet. Can you give me a breakdown of what that $1.5 million is for and
Sure, Council President Bremo and Council Member Tao. That is another transfer to the General Obligation Debt Fund to support our city capital vehicles, the capital fleet, cop cars, fire trucks, things of that nature. It used to be a separate fund in our old accounting systems. So that's why it's kind of broken out between the line 12, but to be honest, they probably could be consolidated, but we've broken that out just to show the dedicated funding for the city fleet support.
Have that confirmed out.
Is that ongoing? I mean, when does that 1.5 expire? No. How does that work?
Sure, Council President Bremeron, Council Member Tao. That has been ongoing for some time, and as long as the city fleet continues to borrow money to support their public safety activities, I think it will be ongoing until other resources are identified.
Mm-hmm. And it's 1.5 is the total amount. What is our average? Do we fully utilize that debt service or...
Sure, Council President Brenmo and Council Member Tao, that's a portion of the debt service. I could get the total amount, but I believe it's in excess of $2 million with property tax and other resources making up the difference.
Ms. Prince.
As a member of the VSP board, I have become aware really close up to the extent that the River Center is the poor stepchild of the city. And
what?
And well, STAR funding came out of the River Center, and we have reduced it to $2 million, but I see that we're further taking away the River Center's STAR funding for the Housing Trust Fund. So I wondered if you could explain that to me.
Sure. Council President Brenmon, Councilmember Prince, this was a package of decisions in order to balance to the resources that we had. The River Center, and I don't want to step too far into Mr. Solomon's world of the debt refinancing, but there was a lot of benefit in this, in the refinancing for the River Center and for that complex in terms of the debt and the parking resources that came out of that debt refinancing. Mm-hmm. And so that was a decision that the mayor made in order to overall balance the STAR fund and make sure that we could accomplish the things that we committed to with the Housing Trust Fund and with other priorities in this fund. It's tough because it's hard to see, right? It's very hard to get a side-by-side year-by-year comparison, especially with all of the moving pieces on the debt. Mm-hmm. But overall, I don't I wouldn't look at the $81,000 in isolation. There's a larger sort of impact to the River Center and Visit St. Paul that came out of this in the items right. that Mr. Solomon discussed earlier. So I know that's called out as a line, and it just gets tricky to see the whole package in one view.
But, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thanks.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And if I may, Council President Brenmon and Council Member Prince, we chatted about your question earlier just in the goal of answering as much at the table as possible. To the question of how long the debt service, the general obligation debt, Director McCarthy's recollection is it's been at least 15 years that we've been doing it out of this fund.
Okay.
So if you need more, I'm happy to get
that. Yeah, I'd like to see the history of what that dollar amount is.
I would add that it used to actually be line itemed out in the law. It used to say the city can use up to $3.5 million in this year, and then in 2013, one of the changes that was made to the law, but the legislature was, that was struck, and we have a little bit more flexibility in how we can spend those funds.
Okay. Thanks.
I suppose those limits are arbitrary. As inflation and other factors change what a baseline looks like. Also, I think in addition to the over-the-years bond, it would be interesting to also see over-the-years sales tax revenue.
Sure.
Because I'm sure that that's increased radically. Did I see anyone else with questions? I mean, obviously we have questions. This is a great funding source and important to our city. And I, to the point earlier about housing, we all agree housing is a top priority, and the funding for it needs to come from a source that's flexible and that, you know, we can be nimble with. So it makes sense. And obviously this is just a lot of information as we come into the final parts of our budget. So I appreciate your answering a bunch of these questions on the fly. It seems like we have a little bit of follow-up. And I guess stand at the ready to maybe join us again on the 4th of December for just a little bit of follow-up in these final weeks as we close up budget. But we really appreciate your information and update and your hard work on the putting this budget together. I know we really, other priority that we keep forgetting to mention is that we all really wanted to keep the levy low. And when you do that, and especially with our bulk of our budget being salary, that it's really challenging to do that. And we had to do a budget that hurt. And so the rearranging of things is part of how we accomplish that. So I do want to recognize that as well. Ms. Anker.
Thank you. Can you just not leave during the next presentation in case we have follow-up questions for you about that presentation?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Council President Brenmon, Council
Just wasn't sure. Okay.
We will be here.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. All right, we will shift gears. We saw the Visit St. Paul River Center Visitor Authority folks march in at halftime. Welcome. Okay. I wasn't on the booking committee.
Yeah. Would you like me to?
Yeah, no.
All right, so I'm just curious, did you come over to City Hall using the scunnel, or did you walk outside?
I was a scunneler.
Sorry.
Both, okay. No, that's good.
I personally was just outside, but
okay.
We came over.
Okay. Okay, just curious. Every once in a while, I walk through that scunnel and... Welcome. All right, so you all joined us after we did our initial
overview. So this is the second piece of our budget committee meeting. We are hearing from River Center Convention and Visitor Authority on the 2020 proposed capital budget. We are looking forward to your presentation. Typically, we have questions as we go through a presentation as opposed to waiting for the end. But if you are getting to it, feel free to tell us you're getting to it, and we'll wait till you get to that piece of your presentation. But it's wonderful to have you here, and we look forward to hearing your presentation for the 2020 budget. Welcome.
Thank you for the welcome, Council President Bren Moen, council members. My name is Terry Mattson. I'm with Visit St. Paul and the River Center. Our purpose for the presentation this morning is to discuss the program and River Center 2020 capital funding summary. Just a little bit of background about our organization and history. That's the portion that requires City Council approval. There's more to the story. I know some of you are very familiar with our organization. President Bren Moen, having served on the board a number of years, Council Member Naker is on the board. Council Member Prince is on the board, and Council Member Tolbert is also a board member. So sorry if some of this is redundant, but we did want to provide the overview of our organization and those relationships. We are one of the more rare instances in the United States where the destination marketing organization, which is the Convention and Visitors Bureau, Visit St. Paul, and the Convention Center Complex, which is the River Center, Roy Wilkins Auditorium, and the River Center parking ramp, are all under the management of the Board of Directors, which is just one board. Usually, they're two separate organizations, the Convention Bureau and the Convention Center, but about 15 years ago, it was before my time, there was the merger. So it's a little bit different animal, and I think sometimes I would admit that in describing what we do and how we do it gets to be a little confusing, so I apologize for that. It's difficult sometimes to go through everything at the 30,000-foot view and give an appreciation of our strategies and the tasks at hand. So having said that, we've introduced some new board members to our organization quite recently, and we have a new way of approaching our onboarding. Which gives that a different perspective. And in addition to the questions that we'll have today, I would certainly enjoy the opportunity to sit down with council members individually to go over any more questions that you have in detail or that we don't have time to answer today. In addition to myself, we have Jamie Lucky Hendrickson with us and also Jim Ibister here at the table. We have a few other staff members in the audience, and I want to pay particular attention and thank board members Jennifer Pennington and board member Richard Ginsburg, who are also in the audience. They are both members of our finance committee, so it's very near and dear to them as well. Before we get into the presentation, I also want to mention one of the hot topics that we've talked about in previous years, the parking ramp. We won't have too much to go into that today, but I will say that thanks to the efforts of your PED, Planning and Economic Development Department, there is information out, and we're waiting on proposals that will outline hopefully the future of where that structure will be in the future. Another thing to probably mention right away, a really bright spot for the Convention and Visitors Bureau side of things in terms of destination marketing. This is the year where we finally got across the finish line with securing some additional resources in the lodging tax. That effort goes back really about 4 years. In that first year, it was gaining the support of primarily the hotels, which is very important, with an additional 1% lodging tax, and the city of St. Paul as we move forward. The second year, we introduced all of this increase to the legislature. We were able to secure the support of the House and the Senate, but unfortunately, there wasn't a tax bill that year. We need to be part of a bigger package. The following year, we went through all of the motions and maintained the support and went through the House and the Senate. There was a tax bill. We were in it, and unfortunately, the governor vetoed the tax bill. So here we are finally 4 years later where we have all the support and a tax bill was signed. Just last month, the city of St. Paul began collecting that additional tax, and we'll see those resources trickling in
in January and in early of 2020. So that's a big, big boost on how we build and grow the destination of St. Paul. Starting on page 2, kind of an overview, we'll talk a little bit more in detail about the budget, but the Convention Center campus, and this includes everything except the Xcel Energy Center, which is a whole other discussion that many of you are intimately aware of. But for the River Center campus, there's an operating budget of about $10.4 million and debt capital investment from the city of $2.17 million. We will point out, but not dwell on, unlike most other convention centers, there's not a subsidy from the city for our facility. Really, our claim to fame or what we do best is service at the facility. And I would say that it's second to none, and really our brand and what keeps us successful. It's a 20-year-old facility now, so sustaining the operations are very, very critical. And one thing I want to thank General Manager Jim Ibester and his team on is the sustainability efforts, particularly this year with being awarded the LEED Platinum certification, not only a leader in the United States, but throughout the world as well. So congratulations and kudos on that. As we flip over to page number 3, this breaks down a little bit more graphically about our funding mechanisms. The Visit St. Paul Destination Marketing Organization, primarily with that hotel-motel tax, also our foundation and membership and partnerships, a budget a little over $3 million. River Center operating budget, the $10 million comes from rents and services, food and beverage, and the parking ramp. Our convention promotion fund, which is used in attracting groups, is primarily out of the half-cent sales tax and reserves. And the River Center portion of the sales tax for the operating budget is $2.169 million. Just briefly, an overview of the organization, something that's been very, very important for us, and certainly a journey that we've been very proud to be a part of. And going into it, we didn't know what we didn't know. I think we've gotten a lot better on it. We're partnering with the City of St. Paul to help build the cultural destination areas. We're very active members in GARE, the Government Alliance on Race and Equity, participating in their meetings and conferences. Also very active in participating in the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce Equity Series, a number of events throughout the year, and we were host sponsors of the Equity Summit recently in October of 2019. Next, I wanted to introduce Jamie Lucky Hendrickson, who is our new Vice President of Marketing and Partnerships. She's been with our organization for a few years, but in the last few months we did a merger of our two departments, membership and marketing. The strategy here is to be more collaborative, more efficient. Jamie brings a wealth of experience, and we're going to give some time to discussing leisure travel and what we're currently doing and what we're going to do with the additional 1%. So I'll turn it over to Jamie. Thank you.
Council President Brendamone and council members, thanks for the opportunity to share with you about Visit St. Paul's leisure marketing efforts. The first thing I want to touch on is we passed around copies of the St. Paul Insider's Guide, and for us that is a primary tool for really telling St. Paul's story. We've just begun work on our 6th issue, which is scheduled to come out in spring 2020, and the guide is designed both to inspire a trip to St. Paul as well as to serve as a resource for visitors once they're in the city. Each year we distribute 125,000 copies. That's done, you'll see them in the community through hotels and businesses. We also have them through local and regional visitor centers. Additionally, we direct mail them to anyone who requests information about St. Paul, and that amounts to, on average, about 1,000 copies a month that we're mailing right into people's homes so that they have a copy of the guide in advance of their time here and can make plans. Over the past year, we've had requests from all 50 states as well as 50 countries, so we're really proud of that opportunity to get that St. Paul story into people's hands that way. Also, over 30,000 subscribers of Minnesota Monthly received the guide with their June issue of the magazine. A lot of visitor guides that we see from cities end up being just a a book of listings, and we work really hard to be more than that. We want to create an engaging and inspiring presentation of what our city has to offer, and we do that through rich editorial content, beautiful imagery, and by featuring insiders. We know that everyone who loves St. Paul has a story to tell about what to do and see, and we present our guide through the voice of insiders that know and love the city. And taking their personal snapshots together offers a taste of the endless ways to make a visit to St. Paul unique and memorable. Over the last 5 years, or since the first issue of the guide, we've collaborated with 45 insiders, and this slide shows you the five insiders that you'll find in this year's copy of the guide. In 2020, we have the opportunity to expand our leisure marketing efforts as a result of proceeds from the additional lodging tax. What this means is that we can reach potential visitors to St. Paul in ways that we've never done before, because we never before had the money to do so. So we'll be focusing our efforts on growing travel to St. Paul from audiences within the 300-mile drive market through paid digital marketing. Visit St. Paul already has strong content and brand platforms through our website and our social media, and this strategy will build on that. Our first step is to develop our key visitor personas, and those will each include actionable data and insights for our most valuable audiences that allow us to understand them so that we can deliver a personalized experience. This is an example of a persona. So this is Julie. She's a mom and a planner, and in her family, she makes decisions when it comes to their travel. So in developing each persona, we consider the customer, their trigger for traveling, what matters most to them, what are the barriers, how to break through, and how to reach them. Once each of those personas are developed, we'll be completing customer journey mapping. So what that means is we'll start with their trigger point. So, for example, with Julie, that might be that she feels that she needs her family to reconnect. And then we'll move through to awareness, consideration, decision-making, experience. And then once they're here, how we'll get them to come back to St. Paul again. In this process, we'll determine where then we place that paid media and how we use that money. Along the way, we'll be able to digitally connect with them and put St. Paul in front of customers during their research and decision-making process, and then connect them with relevant content through Visit St. Paul's platforms, increasing awareness and interest in St. Paul as a leisure travel destination. Once the campaign launches, we'll use dashboard reporting to measure return on investment and the impact on key performance indicators like tourism tax revenue, year-over-year revenues, website traffic, visitor guide requests, and social media growth. We're really excited to be able to do this and for the launch of this effort in 2020, and we look forward to coming back and sharing results with you next year.
Ms. Baker.
Thank you. I am also really excited about this. And just because the 1% lodging tax hopefully will just, because of these efforts and others, grow and grow and grow in terms of revenue, can you remind us what the requirements are in terms of how the lodging tax has to be spent?
Yes. Going forward, and there was some state legislation that was passed many years ago, but state statute now reflects the fact that 95% of lodging taxes collected must channel to the local convention and visitors bureau to be used for advertising and promotion. So prior to this, there was 1 3% lodging tax that is retained by the city of St. Paul. There was another 3% lodging tax, of which 95% went to Visit St. Paul or is going to Visit St. Paul. The other 5% is retained by the city for administering that tax. And this new 1% follows under that state law where the dollars must flow to Visit St. Paul and be used for marketing and promotion. And that's consistent throughout the state of Minnesota, and part of what was necessary in getting that legislation and the new tax passed was gaining the support of other municipalities and convention bureaus and the hotel industry throughout the state of Minnesota. So we're simply following state law.
So just to be clear, 5% of the 1% comes to the city for administering it, and 95% of the 1%
correct
goes to tourism, promotion, and advertising, and so cannot be spent on staff, on capital. I guess I'm wondering how broadly that's defined.
Well, staff would be included in that. That's part of a solid destination marketing effort. Nothing happens until you sell it. A lot of this new resources going to the leisure travel part of destination marketing, but traditionally Visit St. Paul has been very strong in the convention sales side of things, which is an entirely different discipline. It's about relationship building and working with meeting planners and convention groups that not only fill our River Center facility but also fill the hotels in the surrounding area. And I'll discuss a little bit more about that in a moment.
Mr. Chow.
Thank you. Thank you. I always like technology. I think that it's a good platform. A lot of people are engaged in that. I'm just very happy when I'm going to my vehicle and I see people with badges and they're walking from an Intercontinental Hotel or back and forth, and always make me smile that they're bringing the money here and they're spending here. And that you guys are, your team are doing your work. And so I always appreciate that. And I think it never hurt us to try our best to stop them and thank them for visiting St. Paul and using St. Paul. What are some of your ideas for, maybe you've already have a plan for this, but I feel like St. Paul is also a hub for healthcare and the healthcare sector. And so are we reaching out to that sector? This is also a good place for convention around healthcare.
Council Member Tao, President Brenn-Mohan, council members, thank you, Council Member Tao, for your kind remarks. That was very... very wonderful to hear. Healthcare and those meeting sectors are ones that we've already sought out and host a number of those groups, whether they be technology, automotive, political. They all fall in the realm of different segments. So we're not so much into developing hospitals or healthcare, but we like the people associated with those industries to come to St. Paul, spend their money, and then move on. That would be a good segue into page number 10 on what we're doing to reach all of those sectors. 2018, if you recall, we had the Super Bowl and a few other big events that had a big impact on the hotel industry, not only in St. Paul, but throughout the metro. So we've done very well in 2019, and we're booking more future business than ever. We know there's some soft spots for a number of reasons in 2020, however. Our future is very solid and very bright, but some of our very key stakeholders are the hotels. And, one can be argued, it can be argued whether it's the consumer or the hotels that are paying the additional taxes, but they certainly have a closeness to it and a sense of ownership in seeing those dollars go where it's going to benefit their bottom line the most. So in 2019, we've already established a cash incentive program, something new, to help us generate more business in the short term that will not only benefit River Center, but it's to be applied for groups that would simply use hotels as well. So you can see on the right-hand side of that page how the cash incentive program works. Also, an aggressive new lead program with marketing, integrated marketing media, a firm that specializes in lead generation across the country. And we just established this within the last 60 days, and we're already seeing some very, very good results on that. And I will go back again to nothing happens until we sell it. And this side of the business is very people-oriented, very one-on-one direct sales type of strategy, as opposed to some of the things that Jamie discussed in more of the leisure travel marketing side of things. That leads me into page 11, which is, it talks about the convention promotional fund.
Can I just interrupt you a quick second?
Absolutely.
Mr. Tolbert has a question or a comment.
Could you talk more about the leads? We hired a company to go out in leads. Are we proactively searching for people too? And how do you go about doing that? And what have we had any results as a result?
Council Member Tolbert, yes, uncovering leads, part of the mining for new business is always a critical part of our organization and our efforts. We've been doing that for a number of years. This is a firm that specializes in uncovering new business, new leads that we might not have been aware of. So it is generating positive results already. It's only been within about the last 60 days that we've been working with these folks, but we're seeing a number of new leads that we simply weren't aware of up until this point. But it depends on new business generation, and it also depends, our success depends on retaining business that we've been courting and servicing and helping for years.
What are some of the new businesses that we've been able to land?
I don't know if I could name any offhand, but there's been two or three new groups. I wish Jane Lewis were here, our Vice President of Sales.
Yeah, that would have come out of this. Yeah, you'd have to talk to Jane.
Yeah, I can follow up on that and find out, but there's been a few new. It's just been in the last few weeks, so I couldn't name them.
But in 2019, did we add any new ones?
We've generated some leads within the last 30 days, and we've booked a couple of pieces of business out of it, not for 2019, but for 2020 and beyond. And I'd have to follow up with exactly who that is.
What I'm getting at is, did we have any new business in 2019 that we didn't have in 2018?
New groups?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We could follow up on a list of old business and new business, but we're certainly retaining customers and bringing new groups to the building as well.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was this year or not. Susan, maybe you can help, but I know we had the Clifton Allen Larson. Was that this year that we had those two big groups?
One of them was this year.
They do. Yeah, so we're picking up some of those bigger things that have dropped in that actually have saved us a lot, some of those bigger groups that have come in. Unfortunately, I think in 2019 we probably lost as many as we gained in that year just because of business climate, people's choices, people growing out of our building, those kinds of things.
So we didn't add any new business in 2019 in total?
Oh, no, we've had a tremendous amount of new business, but it...
But I'm saying...
Not in incremental.
In addition to our baseline.
On dollar purposes or in actual business naming?
I'd say both.
I mean, if from a dollar purposes, obviously we added business. We would have been in a lot worse shape if we didn't because of some of the business that we did lose. There's always we probably have in our facility that my best data that I recently looked at, we're probably at about 61% repeat business, and always about 30-some percent new business. Now that new business varies from a single meeting, dinner, to a convention. It can be a mix of all those particular things, and that usually happens as a cycle every year. We wouldn't be able to survive without new business. So.
And is that your part of the organization or your part of the organization that recruits?
Both.
Both.
Yeah. And on the building side of things, that would focus on those events that are exclusive to the physical property on the campus. What we'll do and provide answers to you on is tracking new groups as well, not only within Rivers Center but throughout the community. We also book groups that might be exclusive just to one or two hotel properties that aren't using the convention center as well. But I'm sorry, I just don't have a list of those top of mind and in my head right now. But we can follow up and get that for you.
Did we recruit any new events in 2019? That we didn't have in 2018.
New convention groups? I believe you just had...
No, new events to come to St. Paul.
Yes.
What were they?
One of them was the Clifton Allen Larson group that we had earlier in the spring. We've had, from a building perspective, we had Fantasy Flight Games had a big event in Roy Wilkins Auditorium for 5 days. It brought people from across the country. We've had numerous individual one-off meetings and a couple other larger particular events. There's quite a few. Like I said, there's usually about 30% of our business is new that has come in for that particular year.
I think another important one to mention that still is taking place very soon in 2019 is Destination Winter, a collaboration between Visit St. Paul and the St. Paul Saints at CHS Field, which will be partly moving our Wells Fargo Winterskate from Landmark Plaza to CHS Field, combined with other activities that will last many weeks throughout the winter, which is something we created. And I think this leads into a bigger discussion about our role in creating new events. There aren't a lot of events that we would court and attract that are more festival-oriented. Most of those are like homegrown type of activities. But that's a big one that we're very proud of, and we should see a lot of success from going into the winter season.
Yeah. Will you tell me the name of it again? Winter?
Destination Winter St. Paul.
Destination Winter St. Paul. Okay. And I want to learn more about that. And I guess it's coming quickly, I mean, based on the weather. But I would like to hear more about that. I think we discussed a little bit in the early part of our budget when we were discussing winter are the holiday lights and the winter skate and other attractions in the city. And I think at the time I had heard rumor about the winter skate moving down to CHS Field, but then when I mentioned it was like, oops, that cat is not yet supposed to be out of the bag. So I don't know much about it, so hopefully we'll can get a report back on what we can expect and how we can help share in promotion of that event, because winter is a matter of fact here in St. Paul, and the more we embrace it, and let everyone know that we're embracing it and invite them to join us, the better it is, because it's irrefutable. It's coming, it's happening, and it's something that we do a great job embracing here. So the more we know about that, the more we can partner with you as well.
Yes. Thank you, Council President Bren Moen. And just to add on that, we see great things coming from this event. It was really born out of the idea of celebrating the 40th anniversary of the U.S. Olympic hockey team win over Russia. Which happens on a Saturday in February to the day of the 40th anniversary. Part of this event will include the Greatest Day Parade on that Saturday in February, but you've got events starting from, I think it's December 6th, all the way into early February. So it will include also the Securian Super Slide, which was around for the Super Bowl. The lighting of Rice Park will still take place this Saturday, powered by XL Energy, as it always has. And the Winter Carnival will be doing some new things in Landmark Plaza to fill in where the skating rink departed from. So we really see it as a way to develop and enhance these events, particularly as the city has pulled away some of the resources from making those happen. So there's more pressure than ever to produce these events, and that's one that we can say unequivocally will be very, very successful for St. Paul.
Right, and then that location around the Landmark Center is just so beautiful, and it's such a great place to do programming. I think moving Winter Skate down to CHS and what you're describing sounds like a wonderful – sometimes things run their course in a certain location, but the idea of keeping programming and keeping winter and holiday spirits alive in that particular area makes sense to me, just given the beauty of the Landmark Center, the St. Paul Hotel, and then our Ordway and, the other destinations in the area, Meritage. But I'm glad to hear that we're focused on also keeping that area active and vibrant, even with this transition. So it's good to know. It's exciting. Mr. Tao.
Thank you, Council President. One of the things that we hear from local business is that the city put too much regulation on small business, and one way that we can help them is to deregulate. And so what can the City of St. Paul City Council do, top three things to help Visit St. Paul do their job better?
Council Member Tao, President Bren Moen, council members, the passage of the budget and your support is a big starter. There's a couple pages that I'd like to go over here, 11 and 12, when we talked about groups and new groups. On page 11 is a breakdown of that promotional fund, and that's where a few hundred thousand dollars very quickly turn into an impact of over $28 million. So the fact that you're supporting our efforts, everything that you can do, it's not our role to set or advise on overall policy or the business climate, but keeping a very robust facility in River Center is very, very important. I'd say addressing very quickly the parking ramp situation and how we move forward is in that top two or three. And just being aware of and engaged of what it takes to build a destination. You know, we've always been in the marketing and sales side of things. But as we move forward and want St. Paul to be successful, I think just all of us having a place on the table and discussing how this all interfaces, how things work together, and recognizing the challenges that we face in selling the destination. We do tourism for the people who live here, not for the visitors. It takes visitors coming into town and spending money in order to make the money cycle work. But I'll draw your attention to page 12 as well. The fact that you were supportive of and helped us move forward with the 1% lodging tax is a big plus. Page 12 is demonstrative of comparative budgets in our competitive set. And you can see Visit St. Paul with $3.3 million roughly in our 2020 budget is just starting to enter the realm with tourism cities like Rockford, Illinois. If we compare ourselves budget-wise with the Madisons, the Omahas, Des Moines, they're really twice the resources. But
Mr. Mattson, to be fair, Madison doesn't have Minneapolis next door. Milwaukee, there's two cities side by side that are doing promotion. Do we coordinate with Minneapolis Visitor Bureau? And do we? I mean, because if an event outgrows our facility, let's hope it's going to Minneapolis, right? Are we being intentional about that resource? Because when I see, our population in the metro is 3.28, I know that we're spending a lot more money than just what Visit St. Paul is putting out because Minneapolis is doing something similar, right?
Exactly. Council President Brenmoen, you brought up some good points. I would like to address, our perspectives from that. And this isn't a complaint. It's just a comparison. But there's still, a difference in $3 million in resources and $6 million is pretty, pretty great. And it affects our ability of what we're doing. And as far as competition with places like Minneapolis, I'll give you an example. It's probably more of a situation of cooperation. There's things that we work very, very closely on. I could give you some specific examples where we've courted and developed some very good pieces of business, and it's been pulled out from underneath us by Minneapolis. And our largest piece of business, in fact, with Super Value and Unify is that case where we were planning on hosting this group again in 2020. It meant over $1 million in sales for our campus, and it went to Minneapolis. So sometimes we cooperate, sometimes very, very clearly we're competing head to head. And this is just an example of the resources we have. You take away that 1% and put us $500,000 behind that, and it's a much different situation. So hopefully that answers your question.
It does. I guess I would just say there are plenty of examples in the metro area where we are very intentional about working together, and I'm not on the board anymore. I won't necessarily follow up on this, but I think it is an asset. I think having Minneapolis so close by is an asset to us in so many ways. So just hoping that we are being intentional about that cooperation or cooperation and recognizing that there's a lot of resource going out there to draw people to the Twin Cities area, and we offer different things. And of course I want us to win, but I want to also make sure we're being intentional about working with Minneapolis to the extent possible and trying to avoid undermining each other, because we all lose when that happens. Ms. Nager.
Thank you. And also on this slide, I understand that it's not a complaint, it's a comparison. But I do think it would be useful, given that you present this during a budget presentation, perhaps not just to see the 2019 budget for those DMOs, but to see the respective city's investment in those DMOs compared to St. Paul's. So to see not just how much those particular institutions have available to spend, but what's the relative city investment in them. And you maybe could make a complaint there, or maybe we're looking really good. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see.
Thank you, Councilmember Nager, President Brenmoen. We will certainly follow up, and I think it would be worthy having additional discussions on those elements in the future. I would add, too, in the spirit of cooperation, there are many and many events. The Final Fours of the world, the Super Bowls of the world, they don't arrive in the metro, whether it's St. Paul or Minneapolis, without Minneapolis, St. Paul, Bloomington, working together very, very closely. And I know we're going to be in a situation with some announcements in the next few months on more of our cooperative efforts to bring more of that sports-related business to this destination. So we're all in this together in a sense. I think we'd also want to focus on the fact that aside from bringing people from long distances, we need these resources in the budget to bring day trippers to the city of St. Paul. I can speak to the fact that we know there's a very strong market in the West Metro that because of a lack of resources that we haven't been able to do the kind of job we need to do just to get people to visit St. Paul for a day, and that's very impactful and benefit to the bottom line as well. Moving forward, I think you've all probably heard enough from me. Page 13 gets into the capital budget, and I'd like to introduce Jim Ivester, our general manager of the River Center, to walk us through that.
Mr. Ivester, I just want to make one, before we segue to this last part, which I know we're running out of time, but I wanted to acknowledge in the Visit St. Paul book, we have in the past were raised concerns about how we were focusing our attention on certain parts of the city and not other parts of the city. And I just want to acknowledge that we've come a long way in terms of what is represented in the booklet and what is represented as our neighborhoods. And I just, two things in particular stand out to me. One is, I think it's interesting and I'm intrigued at the bundling of the Capitol area with the North End. I think that the Capitol area has its own neighborhood identity, but it is looking at that way that we connect sort of that gateway from the Capitol up into the North End, since you Rice Street is your only way up because of railroad crossings and other things, is a really smart way to kind of put a neighborhood that has trouble finding its identity on the map. And so I'm interested in looking at that. I like that. There's something about that that intrigues me, and I think on the actual neighborhood map, it's in kind of a weird location for what the North End is, but I do, that's something that interests me. And then the other thing is, I know that we've mentioned before, you know, the east side is, it's big. And when we just say, oh, and then there's the east side over there, we're missing out on opportunities to single out particular areas. And I just would suggest maybe, I realize that this would make it an uneven division maybe, but identify a lot of places that I would call lower paying avenue, and maybe that needs some marketing finesse. But, you know, from Brunson's and all the way down to Minnesota Music Cafe and up a ways, where they're seeing so much investment in such an Eat Street area, and I think that that could be singled out as sort of a destination for people who just want to do that culinary thing, and then separate out like maybe the East Side Park District. There's, you know, obviously Battle Creek and Phelan and other ways that you could separate that and show that there's distinct areas, because it's sort of, it looks kind of lumped together, but saying that at the same time recognizing that we're making progress and that it really does feel like you're being intentional about naming all the parts of our neighborhood, not every part. It would be impossible. The map would be silly, but to really pointing out destinations for people. And so we often complain when things aren't right, and I want to say that I recognize that this is a difference, and I appreciate that, getting more granular, especially on areas that haven't been destinations in the past.
Thank you, Councilmember Brennan. What I'll say, you're touching on something that we actually on our team spend a lot of time discussing, like our neighborhoods and how to define them. And we have our, you know, district council areas, and then we have how people just talk about, you know, what area of the city you're going to and how to refer to it. And then, you know, we discuss neighborhoods and then business districts and cultural destination areas. So, like, what is the right way to talk about it? So it's some, I appreciate your comments, and thank you. We've spent a lot of energy on that.
Great.
And I might just add, President Bren Mullen, thank you for those comments and that input. And I think this is an example of where we'd all benefit, spending more time together individually and going through some of those details and getting your impact beyond once a year in council chambers. So thank you. We'll follow up.
Yeah, great. You know where we are. All right. Thanks. Sorry for that interruption, but I appreciate that. Okay.
Thank you. Council members, I do want to go through the capital budget as we normally do. As you know, the building's now about 22 years old. We do our best to keep it on a day-to-day basis a clean and inviting building, but as with any building, it obviously needs to be maintained, but it also needs to be maintained at an ability that allows us to sell the building. We put our capital budget together thinking about it in terms of five critical areas. First, we have to identify what our obligations are or what our debt obligations might be. We think about it from a safety and security perspective, revenue generation, expense reduction and efficiency, and then finally, what can we do from a brand perspective in the facility? And so we've done that same thing here. About $1.7 million, probably closer to 1.8. There's a couple thousand dollar difference there that didn't quite fall in the particulars there, but is where we are for our capital funding. I won't go down to every project unless you have a particular question. Feel free to.
Ms. Nelson.
Yeah. So are these two slides the same total but shown differently?
That
so
is correct.
One
yes.
of them is if you were to break this all out by debt and.
The only thing that doesn't have a debt on the first page.
And well, the debt won't be on this one
because
correct. Obviously it
right.
doesn't categorically fit in there. And then could you maybe give us a sense of the last time some of these things were updated? That would help me contextualize, because when you're just looking at kind of these one-up
sure.
upgrades, it's a little hard to get your head around it. Understanding it is, it's like one of our premier world-class event facilities. But
right.
understanding how recent some of these have happened, if you wouldn't mind walking us through.
I can certainly do that as we go through.
Yep.
The first couple areas there, you'll see lobby interior design and design engineering for Wilkins Pass-Through. Both of those are design and exploration of looking at a couple of our buildings, areas of our building to put us a little bit more on a branding sales first impression pathway, and also expanding our ability to be more flexible in our spaces. First of all, with regard to the lobby interior design, that is a first impression for many people. It's also actually a destination. It's a room we use quite a bit for lunches and registrations and those kinds of things. We think that it's a very nice space, very open, very bright, but it also, was designed in 1998, and we think that we can reflect a newer space in that area. So we do want to get a few designers in to help us reimagine that space. Coincidentally, one of the ideas that we had tossed around is how do we bring the neighborhoods into that space? How do we identify them when they come into that public space about, what am I going to do today when I'm here at this convention and here all the neighborhoods are listed in some way or another, as we think would be a really great way to roll that in. The designing and engineering of the Wilkins Pass-Through is a sort of a standalone building. The only way you can get to it is through that skyway hallway. We think that there's some perhaps better ways of selling that complex if we can actually access it through our fourth floor ballroom area, so that when you're in that main area, then you just walk into perhaps a general session area in Roy Wilkins. We think perhaps one of the long-term ideas for Wilkins is to push it out to be a more complete and nicer general session area for conventions. That area hasn't been touched since the early 2000s, when we did a little bit of cosmetic work and we did the school up in the ballroom area, which are now the dance studios. Before that, it was about the 1980s, and before that, it was probably the 40s when it was touched. The next thing I'd like to talk a little bit about is a couple down is the roof at $650,000. We've been working on the roof for about 4 years. And we do that because that's how much resources we have. So we pick – the River Center roof is many different roofs put together, many different levels and different sizes. And we find about the resources that we think we can have, figure out the roof that we're going to do, and we budget for that particular area. So there's still probably 2 more years left of roof projects that we have to do. This one is likely going to be focused on Roy Wilkins Auditorium. I would say probably about 12 years ago, we did the lower half of the barrel of Roy Wilkins Auditorium just to get by. It's all we could afford. We have to do the whole thing now. So we'll be moving forward with that. Moving down, unless there's any particular questions, down to where it says HVAC, VAV. Those are control systems within our HVAC system in our ballroom. We identified a whole bunch of energy-saving projects back in our recommissioning days. I think it was all the way back in 2013. From that recommissioning, we identified lighting, energy savings, air quality, water quality, all of these different projects, many of which we've done. That's how we essentially got LEED Platinum. But there's still a lot on that list that we have to do. One of the more difficult ones is replacing the control system that controls the how the air comes out and whether it's heated or cooled in the ballroom space. Very difficult, A, because of timing, and there's a lot of them, and it's expensive. And B, because right now what we've realized is that they built all of those control systems sort of into the roof. There's like very into the ceiling. There's very little access. So not only do we have to figure out how do we access those and access them on a regular basis, but how do we do so efficiently? I think one of our first, just to get access to these things, which are going to probably cost $120,000 when we're all done updating them, just to get access to them, the first round looked like it was going to be about $100,000. And we said, we're not spending $100,000 just to get access to HVAC systems. So we're going to find a new way, and we're going to double down and try to do those kinds of things. But those go a long way to energy savings and environmental comfort for our guests and for our ongoing facility. The last three things there, the large auditorium projectors, the point-of-sale system, and the food and beverage equipment, that all goes towards revenue production. It's about, as you see at the last couple pages of the budget, you know, we try to balance our revenues the best we can. Most of the time our focus will be how do we get more revenue rather than how do we cut expense. I think sometimes focusing on cutting expenses all the time gets you in this sort of downward spiral of, you know, are we at the premium level ability to sell this facility? There are times, obviously, we have to cut expenses and maintain expenses, but can we do them smart in a smart way, but also can we find ways to raise more money so that we can support the operation? Projectors, those auditorium projectors rent for a lot of money because they're to shoot long throw spaces and big, and when we can rent them, you know, we can recover that those costs very quickly. The $82,000 probably recovered in probably 18 months to 24 months, and then we'll start making money on those. The last ones we bought, just as a point of reference, the last auditorium projectors we bought were back, oh, I wish I knew the date. It was early 2000s in a partnership with Public Art St. Paul when they were first doing their first Northern Lights outdoor project, and they needed to project some outdoor things on one of the buildings over here. And we partnered with them, and we said, you invest a little bit like you're renting them, and we'll pay the remainder, and then we'll keep them after you use them. And those have lasted, you know, 10 years, so it is time to replace those. And then obviously the food and beverage equipment. We lead with food and beverage. Food and beverage is one of our primary differentiators amongst other facilities. We think that quality food brings people back. Bad food chases people away. And so whatever we can do to invest.
Really bad food puts people in the hospital.
That makes people sick. whatever we can do to invest in that, we try to do that. One of the big things we'll be doing within the $275,000 is replacing all of our china, which, believe it or not, we've always, you know, there's always breakage. You're always replacing it. They don't make our pattern anymore. So now we have to go out and redo the whole amount of all of our china's, which is an amazing thing. It's amazing, too.
It seems it's kind of intentional, I think.
Yeah.
Oops, we don't make those parts anymore.
That's correct. I think the other thing I found is when I was walking through and talking to our food and beverage provider, Morrissey Hospitality, in that area, we were looking at plates, which is amazing, and the every plate is starting to get a small black circle on the bottom of the plate, and that's just because when they serviced them in the old days, we used to push them down a stainless steel table, and that stainless steel would get in the bottom of that plate. Then you'd wash them, and then they'd stack up, and they'd get this little ring. We don't use stainless steel tables anymore. We use conveyor belts for that very purpose, to maintain our plates in the long term. So that's the projects, before I move on, is there any questions on any of the projects before I
Ms. Prince?
I just want to say the mundaneness of so much of this is really, I really appreciate that we have a 20-year-old building and we're having to make these expenditures, and the care in which I know you make them, the fact that the roof has had to be spread out over several years, and all that, and we qualified for LEED Platinum,
yeah,
is really remarkable. So I want to thank you for that. You said earlier that the LEED Platinum were one of very few convention centers in the country.
The best of our research, were probably number three.
Okay. I would think certainly as people become increasingly concerned about climate, that that becomes a selling point that would bring people to St. Paul.
Without question. We've coincidentally been the U.S. hosting the USGBC Green Building Council, who awards LEED certification. We've been hosting them for the last 3 or 4 years, coincidentally.
Great.
So that's, and those are the kinds of things that we really hope that we get on a regular basis.
Great.
The next page categorizes, as Councilmember Nelson identified, those expenditures that are on the previous page and how they categorize in each of those particular areas. It's a nice spread. It's about what you think it would be as it relates to how those categories work. Page 15 is where the resources come from. 1.219 is the sales tax, and the 1.2 is release sales tax from TIF, giving us 2.419. Debt, as we said, was 390, capital investment 1.7, and then $250,000 allocated to the Convention and Promotional Fund.
Ms. Prince.
Yeah, I am really concerned about the reduction from 500,000 to 250 on the Convention Promotional Fund, because I know that this year with 500,000 we didn't have enough. So I'm just wondering what we think that, how we're going to deal with that reduction.
Councilmember Prince, I know that some of the identified resources within the 1% have also gone into the 250, so it's probably closer to 350 as far as a subsidy source for promotional funds. And some of those resources, excuse me, that were planned in future years that drove that $500,000 investment aren't currently on the table. That doesn't mean that more dollars, allows us to attract and invest in having those particular pieces come. But these are the balances we had to make with regard to the capital resources, which are badly needed in the facility, and Convention and Promotional Fund. And we try to balance that the best we can and, look deeply into Terry's eyes and say, can you get by with $250,000 this year, because we need the capital resources this year, and we just try to work it out the best we can. I don't know if that's a fair characterization of how we're breaking that out.
Well, it's very flattering.
Yeah.
Councilmember Prince, I might add to that as well and confirm Mr. Ibister's remarks. Of the $250,000 you see on the River Center side of things, that will be augmented by at least $100,000 of the new lodging tax to bring it up to $350,000. Not having a couple of groups in particular gives us a little bit of breathing room, but I share your concerns. This is at a level certainly not what it was when the Opportunity Fund was created in 2013 or 2014 that was really derived from freeing up some resources due to the stadium bill, and that was at $700,000 a year. That had a huge, huge, huge positive impact on moving St. Paul forward as a convention destination. But again, was it not so much a complaint, it's the reality. There's only so many dollars to work with, and the River Center dollars that go into subsidizing the groups could certainly be used and other things within the building, so I really appreciate the cooperation and support of Jim and his staff on that side of the operation. It's no doubt a difficult balance between the two.
Yeah, I think to the point of Minneapolis's budget over St. Paul's, I feel that really powerfully, that we are getting by on a shoestring here, and I'm concerned about that because I think that is a really hardcore competitive issue that we face, and I'm concerned about it and want us to kind of figure out what we can do going forward on that.
You're saying that the city are increasing funding from the city to that?
Well, that convention promotion fund cut is that we were at $700,000 a few years ago. Now we're down to $250,000. As a board member, I know that the $500,000 we had this year was inadequate. It's a very competitive market that we're in, and I'm worried about that cut. So I'm not sure where we might find that from, but I would like to look at that.
We're literally running out of time. I know Ms. Naker has a question on this slide, and was one of the reasons why she asked OFS to stick around and PED. I'm going to hurry us through the rest of this, but Ms. Naker had a question before we move past this slide.
Thank you. This probably won't fulfill the buildup it just received, but I'm just curious as to the numbers don't seem to be adding up for me in terms of the amount city budgeted RC sales tax. I'm seeing 1.2 here, but when we saw our STAR presentation, it looked like we were sending 1.9 to the River Center budget. Can anyone help me understand how these numbers line up with the STAR numbers?
Yeah, so the 761 you see in that River Center Complex debt service is actually in the city's debt service fund, so River Center actually only receives that 1.3 less the 81. So that's the 1.219 that they have available for capital.
Okay, so the line 20, the River Center Complex debt service, doesn't go to the River Center. It goes to us to help us.
It's being used for debt service at the complex, but yeah.
Got it. Okay. Super helpful. Thanks.
Well, actually, there's really not much left to talk about anyway. So the end is the operating budget. A couple things really to point out there is that we had a pretty good looking operating budget. Then we lost a major convention that was contracted that decided to leave. Major convention. So we went back and did a little work on revenue, a lot of work on expenses to try and balance the operating budget for the year. So we're working hard on that. And obviously with the ramp, we'll be working directly with the city and PED on what the future of that is. So that's sort of, they're driving that project at this point.
Thank you. Mr. Tao?
Thank you, Council President. Before I forget, Ms. Matheson and Visit St. Paul, I want to acknowledge and thank you for Visit St. Paul's support for the St. Paul Changsha Sister City delegation this year. And Nick was one of the members of the delegation. And I just want to thank you all for that. I thought that it was a very successful trip and the relationship that we have built with Changsha. I think that Nick has also was very professional in our experience there. And I think there's other opportunity for us to explore. It seems like there is a large population of Chinese national who are in the middle class, upper middle class, who have money to spend. And so I hope that in the future we can establish and strengthen that relationship and invite them over to spend their money here too. And I think they would like that.
Thank you.
Great. Other questions or thoughts before we adjourn? Great. Thank you very much for being here. It's wonderful to have you get the update. As you can tell, we're invested and interested in the work you're doing. So thank you so much for being here today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Oh, and thanks for bringing along Ms. Pennington and Mr. Ginsburg, your board members and your staff. It's nice to have you all here as well. Thanks for being here. Hey, colleagues, before we adjourn, I just wanted to remind you, we were handed out Neighborhood Star open project reports. Ms. Nelson, this is for you. Cultural Star, Neighborhood Star, and Year-Round Star, like lists of open projects. And I just, for a little bit of context, I will just tell you that when we used to get these reports, they had stuff going back to like pre-automobile times in the city of St. Paul with open projects, and they've really done a good job of tightening up these lists and making sure things are money is not being tied up in particular organizations. But if everyone could take a look at these lists when they have a moment and see if there's projects that are languishing in their areas that maybe need a little nudge in the right direction. I know that the staff is doing a good job staying on top of these things, but every once in a while there's something on the list that you're like, actually those folks moved or closed or took a different direction. So if there's intel that you can share with PED on any of these projects that are languishing, that would be appreciated. And acknowledging that these are so up to date and amazing compared to, I think, the first time I saw these lists where it was like this budget book full of backlog projects. So I really appreciate that, and I will share any information that we have in terms of projects that could use some help. Ms. Maker?
The words get back whatever they manage to say to close out.
No, that's discussed.
That's an incentive to do it.
That's been discussed. All right. Okay. All right. So if there's nothing else to come before us, we are adjourned.